We're just now entering peak wildfire season in Nevada, but major fires have already been going for weeks now. The Tamarack Fire began on the California side of the Sierra Nevada mountains, but it crossed the border into Nevada last week. As of today, it's burned more than 68,000 acres. So where do containment efforts stand, and will smoke from other fires continue to impact the air quality in Nevada? Tracy LeClaire is an incident spokesperson for the response to the Tamarack Fire. Tracy, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
This fire was growing really quickly for a few days last week. It prompted evacuations in Douglas County, and Governor Steve Sisolak declared a state of emergency there, too. So how are things looking at this point? Where are crews at with containment efforts?
Things are looking really good. For the last couple of days, we have not seen any growth in acreage. We're still holding steady at 68,696 acres. And the containment percentage just keeps creeping up. Today, we are reporting 82% containment.
Wow, a lot of progress has been made. That's great to hear. This fire was caused by lightning. Last year, California was struck by a massive wave of wildfires that were all started by dry lightning, causing more than 4 million acres of the state to burn. What's the risk of something like that happening again?
With the continued drought that we see across the West, conditions are very hot, dry, and the fuels just don't get a chance to recover over the winter. And so we start every fire season, it seems like a little bit drier. So it's definitely a concern.
This Tamarack Fire, it started small and smoldered for a few days before the high winds allowed it to spread so quickly. Is it common to see fires behave that way?
It really depends on the weather. We're kind of at the mercy of Mother Nature. And in this particular case, there were 23 other fires that started at about the same time. Some grew larger more quickly. And, it was just a large storm front that blew through and the terrain aligned with the winds. And that's when we saw the extreme fire behavior.
Do you have an estimate when crews will reach full containment? Are we talking a matter of days or weeks here?
That's still to be determined. The remaining area that's considered uncontained is in an area that's really steep, rocky, rough terrain, almost impossible to get crews into some of those areas. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at is monitoring. We have some live cameras up and continuing to just kind of chip away at the edges.
All right. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Tamarack Fire, which has burned almost 70,000 acres in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Now, Brendan Schneider is an air quality specialist for the Washoe County Health District Air Quality Management Division. Brendan, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Air quality near Reno has been really bad over the last few weeks, thanks to smoke from several fires. The Tamarack Fire, as you just heard, is mostly contained. They've got a lot of progress on it. But do you expect to see these smoky conditions come back this week?
Sure. As long as there are wildfires burning to our west, smoke will easily be transported over the Sierra Nevadas and impact our communities in Nevada here.
You did get some rain over the weekend. Did that storm help kind of move things around and clear up the air a bit?
It sure does. It can help clear up the air, especially for the particulate pollution that comes from wildfire smoke.
The Reno Sparks area has set records for its highest level of particulate pollution on two consecutive days last September during some of those big wildfires. Do you expect to see more days like that this year?
Correct. So 8 of our top 10 worst particulate pollution days have occurred within the last 11 months. We had recently with the Dixie Fire smoke that impacted the Reno Sparks area and gave us our 3 of our top 5 particulate pollution days to go along with those ones that happened in September of last year.
What about the future? As climate change gets more intense and Nevada just gets hotter and drier, is it safe to say that breathing smoke is just part of living here?
Whenever wildfire season happens, that's definitely going to be the smoky season for anyone downwind. So yes, the pattern with the drought, increased temperatures will lead to more wildfires that are larger and more intense.
So what do you recommend for people who aren't sure about how they can protect themselves from breathing really smoky air?
We ask people to be smoke smart, stay indoors when it is smoky outside. Everybody reacts differently to wildfire smoke, so be sure to pay attention to what your body is telling you. Make sure that your indoor air is clean wherever you are indoors. Consider purchasing an air purifier, create a clean air room in your home, and just generally reduce activity and your breathing rate when smoky conditions are present.
So also, who's most at risk with these smoky conditions, and what are the risks that come with wildfire smoke?
There's a whole slew of risks that are included with wildfire smoke exposure. Those that have lung conditions like asthma or heart conditions too, children, older adults, and those that are very active outside during smoky conditions are considered a sensitive group. Those people are particularly vulnerable, but at the levels that we saw in the last 11 months, anyone can be affected by the wildfire smoke. Usually people experience, the chest tightness, itchy eyes, the burning sensation in your throat, but it can lead to more permanent conditions such as lung damage and even premature death.
Do you see a lot of that occurring up there?
Hard to tell at this point in time, but I'm sure there would be some increases in different types of conditions up here.
Is there a smoky season, and when do you expect that to end or clear up?
Usually our wildfire season is typically in the summer months, but we've seen, wildfire smoke impact us up until the middle of October. So usually by October, hopefully these wildfires are contained and we can get back to cleaner air quality.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about recent smoky days in Reno and Sparks, thanks to wildfires that have been burning in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Now, Adam Mayberry is Fire Communications Manager for the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. Adam, welcome back.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Good morning. We just heard from Tracy LeClaire that crews are making a lot of progress on the Tamarack Fire south of Lake Tahoe, but how are things looking closer to Reno and Sparks? Have you seen much fire activity this year?
Well, we're sort of in a donut hole. We've had all these large fires like the Tamarack Fire, the Beckworth Fire, the Dixie Fire, some other nearby fires that have kind of surrounded the Reno, Sparks, Washoe County region. And so with that, we've seen a lot of smoke, obviously, and breathed a lot of smoke. But for the most part, at least through July, we had a handful of small brush fires, anywhere from 1 acre to 4 acres. We were able to get around them fairly quickly with a lot of our, with help from a lot of our partners and other fire cooperators. So I'm really pleased to tell you we're actually have been in a pretty good position in July. I think a lot of that is attributed to the smoke keeping people indoors, because 85-90% of our fires are caused by humans. And so when humans aren't outside, that reduces the wildfire threat a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like you're kind of in a bubble for the time being. Do you think that luck will hold?
I wish I could say it would, but I honestly don't think so. We're always cautiously optimistic, but we're moving into August now. Things are continue to be very dry. We've had some moisture, some torrential downpours in the last few days in certain areas of Washoe County, probably not enough to make much of a difference. But no, we have a long way to go, and we're very vigilant, very concerned, particularly in the higher elevations where there's a lot of timber and underbrush and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you don't think so. And I'm wondering if, from your vantage point, is it basically a guarantee that you'll see thousands of acres burn every year? Is that just kind of the mindset you have to take?
Well, we plan for the worst and hope for the best. I can't sit here and presuppose what the future is going to hold. Mm-hmm. The Tamarack Fire that Tracy was talking about was a lightning strike fire. It was caused by lightning. And that's the minority of our fires, right? I mean, the majority of our fires are caused by humans. So we constantly remind our residents throughout the county not to engage in activities that spark fires. So when people, like the question you just posed to me, when they ask me, you know, you think the fire season is going to be difficult, going to be bad? My response is usually, well, it depends. It depends on you. You know, truly, only you can prevent wildfires. It depends on the cooperation, responsible activities that people do out in the wildland.
Yeah, since you said that slogan, only you can prevent forest fires, you know, that's one of the most recognized and longest running public service advertising campaigns. It's been around since 1947. So after nearly 75 years of that public service message, what are people still not understanding about the threat posed by wildfires?
Well, I think a lot of it is people don't recognize truly how combustible the vegetation is, you know, particularly as we continue to have these winters that just don't provide a lot of snowpack, a lot of water. I think people just need to be educated on the dryness and the dangers of a lot of the vegetation that we have in northern Nevada. We're surrounded by a lot of cheatgrass that burns very hot, very fast. And then as we move into some of the higher elevations, the timber and such, and Trace attests to this, we haven't seen a lot of snow in some of the higher elevations. So that timber has really been real concerning for us. We've said all along that some of the more substantial fires this season will likely be in the higher elevations where the timber and the pines are. It's just a really education effort, and it never gets old. I mean, I tell my colleagues in the communities and the media that, you know, we can talk about fire prevention every day because people need to be reminded how dangerous it is out there. And if you are going to be out in the wildland doing things that could start fires, whether it be target shooting or off-roading or, you know, what have you, be equipped, be prepared with some water, fire extinguisher, some small hand tools so you can put that fire out. It's just all about education. There's nothing that can't be solved with education.
Yeah, you know, when people are enjoying the outdoors, they're doing all sorts of things, camping, off-roading, like you just mentioned. So is that your advice to bring things to combat fires if it gets out of control? Or what else can people do to reduce the risk when they're enjoying time outdoors?
Sure. Well, and let me be clear. I'm not suggesting people become wildland firefighters, but if they spark a small fire and if they're in a position to put it out, do so. If they can't, certainly call 911, which leads to another important piece of information. Try to recreate in an area where you have good cell phone service, where you can make that 911 call and identify the location that you're at. Sometimes half the battle for us is getting to the site of the wildfire, because they're in remote areas that are often rugged and hard to get to. In many cases, you only get up there by air or, on foot. But again, it's just a really a constant education effort to remind people to, we want people to enjoy the outdoors, but be smart about it and be prepared.
According to the National Interagency Fire Center, the 10-year average year-to-date is 35,203 fires covering 3.9 million acres annually. Can you give me a sense of the enormity of 3.9 million acres and sort of the depth of damage left behind?
Sure. I apologize. I assume that question was directed to me.
Yeah.
Well, it can be very devastating. It's very costly for us to suppress fires, particularly when we have air support. We've been on a 100-acre fire last year with substantial air support. Fire was spreading into nearby communities. It was about a $500,000 fire. It was started by an individual who was welding in their backyard, which again just goes to the, to the point that you're going to be engaging in something that is going to spark a fire, to be prepared. But the the devastation of wildfires really reduces our ability to enjoy the scenery, to recreate, because it is many years before that black scar and that vegetation can be rejuvenated. And it's also extremely important, you know, there's a lot of different jurisdictions that manage our parks. There's state parks, there's federal parks, we have county parks, and all of those entities have their own fire restrictions. And it's really important to observe what those fire restrictions are and call ahead. In Washoe County, campfires, for instance, are strictly prohibited now. Any open flames are prohibited, so it includes charcoal, barbecues, you know, those sorts of things. I'm not specific privy to what the federal lands are doing, but it aligns pretty closely with that. I hope that helps.
Yeah, and I wanted to pose the question also to Tracy with the incident management team. You know, sort of that scope of damage question and how long it takes for a forest to recover from such extensive damage.
Well, one of the things we do as an incident management team is we bring in a BEAR team, which is a burned area emergency response team, and they help us determine sort of that scope of damage. How severely was the soil burned? Was it burned so that the mineral content is depleted? Before we leave or before we turn it over to a local team, we try and help them plan for that recovery piece and what that might look like. One of the things we see all the time is that when a fire burns through an area, even though the map may show a large red area, the fire burns in kind of a mosaic pattern. So it's not all totally a moonscape like people might think. And so there are unburned pockets in there, green pockets, where I think sometimes people focus on the devastation side of it and don't recognize that, it's not the entire area of the fire that is completely destroyed. So we work with recovery teams to look at what do we do to ensure that, say, a rain event that follows that we can do what we can to help mitigate any debris flows or washout areas. And then what can we do to help revegetate the area?
And back to you, Adam Mayberry, with the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection. Northern Nevada did get some rain over the weekend. Did that help improve some of the fire conditions in Northern Nevada?
We did get some rain. It was spotty in some areas and pretty strong torrential downfalls in other parts. So very positive. But it might hold us over for 24, 48 hours. It's really hard to tell. As we continue to see dry and temperatures increase throughout August, it's really won't make much of a dent. Certainly gives us some reprieve for, again, a short period of time, but the long term still remains very challenging, very dry conditions. Much of the terrain in Northern Nevada, particularly in the northern part of the county, is covered with cheatgrass, burns very hot, spreads very fast. But I think Tracy alluded to this earlier. It really comes down to what Mother Nature is going to do for us. And the winds are always a concern because that wind pushes that fire, spreads that fire faster in many cases than we can even deploy our resources. So whenever we have a windy day or a forecasted windy day, we're always much more concerned, always on a higher state of readiness, if you will. And always remind our residents through social media channels and through our news partners not to engage in activities outdoors that can start fires, because you're giving us a very little chance to contain that fire in a quick and efficient manner.
I was talking to Brandon Schneider, an air quality specialist, about the poor air quality because of all the smoke. But I wonder, from your vantage point, if there's a bright side to poor air quality, and that's more people are less likely to go outside and therefore less likely to start more fires. Adam, that was to you.
Oh, that, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you say Brendan. I apologize.
No, I was just saying I was talking to Brendan about the air quality, but I'm wondering from your vantage point if, you know, less people outside means maybe a better thing.
Absolutely, it does. And I think that's why we've seen throughout the month of July, not as many large fires within our jurisdiction. Again, we've responded to a handful of brush fires, some in the higher elevations, but really nothing larger than about 4 acres. And we kind of find ourselves in this donut hole surrounded by some of these mega fires like the Tamarack Fire, the Dixie Fire, the Beckwith Fire. But I would contribute a lot of that to just the mere fact that people are staying indoors as a result of the extremely unhealthy air quality and the heavy smoke that we've seen. So there's been some benefit from the smoke in terms of the wildfires. I certainly wouldn't want to sacrifice that just because of the health piece of it, but it absolutely has helped. And again, I'd like to think that a lot of the work we've done to educate and raise awareness to our residents to not engage in activities that can spark fires, because they see what's happening around them. They see the Tamarack Fire and the Beckwith Fire earlier this summer, and the current Dixie Fire, which merged into a smaller fire, and some of the other devastation that we're seeing, particularly in California. So, but again, we're season is far from over. Conditions are going to remain very hot, very dry, and the wildland fuels are extremely dangerous and combustible. And we've seen a lot of erratic fire behavior that we really haven't seen before, certainly not this stage in the fire season.
Tracy LeClaire, I want to go to you for a minute. You're with the Rocky Mountain Incident Management Team, and I want to see if you can kind of speak to overall trends. The extent of area burned by wildfires each year appears to have increased each year since the 1980s. And according to the data, of the 10 years with the largest acreage burned, all have occurred since 2004. Also, that coincides with, you know, many of the warmest years we have on record. What should we take away from these numbers? What does it mean for the future of the West? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We are seeing, I think, more extreme fire behavior. And that corresponds to with the increase in development in what we call the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface. There are more homes and businesses in areas that in the past had a fire started maybe would not have affected them. Really, as Adam is talking about education, it also comes down to the mitigation piece and what can you do to help firefighters fight a fire by mitigating your own property. Looking at your roof, is your roof made of non-combustible material? Have you put screens on your soffits and eaves so that sparks cannot get in and start a fire on your property? Have you removed flammable materials off of your deck? And have you pruned up trees and given adequate spacing between your landscaping? And all of those are things that buy firefighters time to be able to come in and protect your property.
Who poses the greater risk when it comes to the threat of the forest? Is it regular visitors? Is it people who live in the area, or, you know, campers who are just visiting and unaccustomed to being out there? And we have about 15 seconds left.
I just would say we're definitely seeing since COVID an increase in people enjoying our public lands. So, you know, it's really just, I like to say no before you go. Make sure you know the conditions and observe local fire restrictions.
I'm Bert Johnson. It's State of Nevada. Huge wildfires are already burning across thousands of acres in the West. The Bootleg Fire in Oregon has already burned more than 400,000 acres. And in northern Nevada, thick smoke from wildfires in the Sierra Nevada mountains has been filling the sky. So what does the rest of the summer have in store? Gina McGuire-Palma is a fire meteorologist for the Great Basin Coordination Center. Gina, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
When we last talked to you a couple months ago, you mentioned drought conditions were really severe, and then our snowpack would probably melt off more quickly than usual, leaving fuels dangerously dry. Has that scenario materialized?
That absolutely has. We came into the kind of the late spring into the early part of the summer with exceptional drought, which is the worst drought classification. It's a D4 exceptional drought classification from the Climate Prediction Center. And that was covering the southern and eastern half of Nevada. The rest of Nevada was seeing severe to extreme drought, which is a D2 to D3. So it was just kind of a tier or two below, but we were seeing drought across the entire state. Those were the conditions we were seeing in May. And then June was kind of a historic month, really from the 6 weeks from June into the first week or two in July, we had about 3 to 4 heat waves back to back throughout June. We were seeing exceptional temperatures, just record-breaking heat throughout the state, just again, back to back, which was really unusual. So we were seeing these 100 degree temperatures or temperatures above 100 degrees in the valleys all across Western and Northern Nevada and above 115 in the South. We already had the drought ongoing. We already knew the snowpack was going to melt off earlier than normal. And that just perpetuated everything extremely fast. And so we not only lost the snowpack early, in many areas, we were probably 3 to 5 weeks ahead of schedule with regard to our snowmelt, our fuel dryness, and just the types of fire potential we were seeing out there.
Wow. I know that you focus on the Great Basin, but do you have a sense of how things are looking in the Sierra Nevada? I mean, there are already major fires burning on the California side. And of course, the Tamarack Fire near Lake Tahoe already crossed into Nevada. Is that because all the snow is already gone in those mountains?
Yes. June really kind of thrust everything forward. So it did the same in the Sierra Nevada. Our snow melted very quickly. And not only did the snow melt, but the fuels dried out very quickly. I believe we started our season in May the drought was maybe, I want to say it was severe drought. I don't even think it was quite extreme in the Sierra, at least not near the Tahoe Basin at that time. And fast forward to where we are now, and we're seeing extreme to exceptional drought along and to the west side of the Sierra Crest. So the heat, the dryness that we saw during that 6 week period in June and July really intensified our drought conditions in those higher elevations of the Sierra and in all of California. So again, that pushed everything forward. So our fuels were primed and ready when we started getting lightning and some more human starts. And so things really just, I think things were a lot more active than they would normally have been in the June, July time period.
Last time you were on, you also mentioned that monsoon conditions in Southern Nevada were shaping up to be potentially pretty good this year. But now that we're in the monsoon season, how are things looking?
That surprisingly is working out sort of as planned as well. We had not seen a monsoon in the last 2 years, really. So we're coming off of 2 very dry years during the summer, which is a little unusual. And this year was shaping up to be a fairly good monsoon. But that's kind of a hard message to get out there when people are so used to how dry it's been. Everyone's a little bit skeptical about whether or not that's going to materialize. And it certainly has. The wettest parts of kind of the area of the monsoon have been Southern California and also into Southern and Eastern Nevada, which is about where we expected those wetter conditions to be. Now, areas further north and west are typically on the fringes of monsoon moisture. So areas north of Interstate 80 and kind of west of, say, Fallon, including all of the Sierra into California, have been on the drier side. So we've only seen little pulses of moisture bring some thunderstorm activity, a little bit of moisture and increase in humidity, but nothing overall noteworthy in a widespread fashion. But certainly over Southern and Eastern Nevada and then going down into Arizona, Utah, all of those areas that would typically see the monsoon that haven't, definitely are seeing the monsoon moisture. And it's having a very big effect on the decrease in fire season in those areas.
You know, last August, a huge series of wildfires got started in California when there were dry lightning strikes. And are you concerned we might see that same pattern repeat in some of those areas that are not getting the moisture you mentioned?
Definitely. Thunderstorms are really tricky. And, you know, they can either be helpful producing a lot of rain, or a lot of times they just produce lightning and not much moisture to make a difference. And then we see fire starts and they produce gusty outflow winds, which perpetuates fire spread. So thunderstorms as a whole are very problematic, and especially in areas like California and into the Sierra, Western and Northwest Nevada, that have still been on the dry side, those thunderstorms are still very concerning. And we watch them very closely, because any dry lightning, even if it's after a period of moisture, if we've had a little bit, even a few days to a week to dry out, those dry lightning strikes are very significant. So even in areas that we've had more significant moisture, we still watch that. It's not as concerning over southern eastern Nevada that have had quite a bit of moisture. But again, if we have a drying period, sometimes those fuels can bounce right back and be dry enough to ignite and perpetuate fire spread. So in the areas that we've had a lot of lightning, and even if we've seen significant precipitation, when we do dry out, not only do we watch for any return of lightning, but we're also watching the heat and the relative humidity, because that's when we typically get holdovers to pop up. And holdovers are just fires that were started by lightning, but they, with the moisture in the air, they haven't really had an opportunity to sort of perk up. And then oddly enough, they'll sort of simmer there and you won't really know they're there. And then as soon as we dry out, maybe get a little bit of wind, get some more warmer temperatures, all of a sudden fires pop up.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Gina McGuire-Palma. She's a fire meteorologist for the Great Basin Coordination Center. Gina, the fires burning in the Sierra right now are in the forest, but last time we had you on the show, you mentioned Nevada's biggest burns tend to happen in areas with a lot of grass. We haven't really seen one of those take off yet this year. Why do you think that is?
Probably a couple different reasons. Like you mentioned, I try to caveat our fire seasons. A lot of people look at the number of acres burned. That's one way to determine how active a fire season is. So when we have our biggest years in Nevada, where we burn the most amount of acres, you know, we're talking, you know, 300, 400, a million acres, whatever the case may be. Those are our big years where we have a lot of grass fires. They ignite quickly. They spread fast with a little bit of wind. And then they usually aren't big problem fires, meaning they don't last long periods of time, but they burn hot and they burn quickly and they burn a lot of acres. So that's one way to look at a fire season. So we're not seeing that this year. And we haven't yet, and I don't anticipate we're going to see a huge problem with large grass fires simply because of the drought that we have ongoing, and the amount of precipitation we had last year during the winter and the spring was very low. So we didn't get a lot of moisture to promote new fine fuel growth. So we don't have a lot of new growth across the state. And when we are in deep states of drought that we're currently in, even with a little bit of moisture, it's really hard for that moisture to take hold and allow fine fuels to grow. So a lot of times we don't see a big robust green up or growth of those fine fuels, even with some precipitation when we're so deep into drought. So those are two of the reasons why we haven't seen a lot of new growth. And without that new growth, we just don't have the fine fuels to carry the fire long distances. Now we do have some areas, there's areas of Northwest Nevada that did have a little bit of fine fuel growth for some really timely late spring precipitation. But again, it's usually fairly short. It's not overly continuous. We do have a little bit of carryover fuels, which are fine fuels that were from the last year or two that carried over. I mean, they kind of died and were just sitting there just waiting to burn. But we had some pretty good snowpack during the January, February timeframe in Western and Northern Nevada. And what that does is it kind of compacts all of our carryover fine fuels, meaning it mats it down. And then when the snow melts, the grass pretty much just is gone. But the higher elevations, totally different story. So again, we went into the season thinking that we were not going to have kind of a big year with respect to acreage burned, but we would still have a significant year because we were more concerned with the higher elevations, which again tend to burn less acreage, but they're usually longer duration. Like Tamarack Fire is a perfect example. It's been around a couple of weeks now. It's longer duration. It's more costly. It causes more resources to be allocated. And, you know, they're just longer duration problem fires, and they could also be very impactful to communities. So again, it's not showing up in our acreage for the year. If you were to look at this and compare it to any other big year, you'd say, oh, well, this is a small year. Well, yeah, in respect to acreage, but in respect to fire potential in our higher elevations, it's still very significant.
A moment ago, you mentioned that conditions for fires are about 3 to 5 weeks ahead of what you'd normally see in some parts of the state. So what should we expect for the rest of the season moving forward then?
And we have had some changes recently because of the moisture that's moved in. I will say before the first initial push of the monsoon earlier in July, we were that 3 to 5 weeks ahead of schedule. We were very hot, very dry. Fuel moistures were exceptionally low when compared to what they would normally be for the time of year. Now, since that time period, since we've had this push of monsoon moisture, it's pushed our fuel moistures a little bit closer to normal, especially over the southern and eastern part of Nevada. Now, getting up towards Western Nevada and the Sierra, I'd say we're, you know, probably on schedule for what we would typically see this time of year. And that's still very dry because mid-July through early mid-August is usually our most active and most severe part of the fire season. So now that we're to say that we're on schedule and near normal is still significant. But what we expect for the rest of the fire season is, you know, we're looking maybe the first half of August being mostly on the dry side, maybe breezy at times, maybe hit or miss thunderstorms, but we're not seeing any long duration periods of moisture at this point for the first 2 weeks of August. So what that will do for us is dry everything out again. And so we're looking for our fuel moistures to drop and kind of push us right back into where we would normally be this time in the fire season. So we'll be watching as we get later in August for that next push of thunderstorms. That'll kind of be where we'll be watching. And certainly people out recreating, that is always a concern as it dries out as well. So we're not done with fire season yet. I would still expect another active, busy period here going at some point from probably mid to late August. And what we would probably, compared to what we would typically see, I would say we still have above normal fire potential, meaning, you know, we could see these higher elevation fires be more significant, mainly in the Sierra and on kind of the west side of Nevada.
You know, as global climate change continues to influence weather patterns here in Nevada, fire seasons are going to become more severe or potentially just harder to predict in general. And so, you know, moving forward, this is a little bit speculative, but do you think we need to rethink how we spend time in the outdoors?
I always think you should be mindful when you're outdoors. And with respect to our fire season, you know, we've seen this over the last 10 to 15 years where we no longer talk about fire season being, you know, June through September or June through August or whatever the peak might be. You know, we look at that as, you know, this is typically when we see our biggest fires and our most, you know, widespread highest fire potential. But we're certainly knowledgeable that fire seasons are all year. They've been more severe recently, certainly in California, you know, parts of Nevada as well. We always get fires sometimes when it's dry in the winter times. So we certainly know when our peak fire season is, but we know that fire season is a year-round event. And I would say always being mindful of the conditions, regardless of the time of year, never lowering your situational awareness, whether it's July or January, could be a huge benefit to everyone. Because in years that we've had very dry conditions, we have people that go out hunting, you know, we have target shooting, all these things that in wetter years aren't too much of a problem. And people are so used to times of January through April being, you know, times where there's not really a big fire concern. But we've certainly seen in the last, you know, 10 to 20 years that's not always the case. And so being understanding that when it's dry, fuels will ignite like they will in August. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. The weather conditions change our fuel conditions so much, and it changes our fire situation. So always just being mindful of that, I mean, taking that into account whenever you're recreating in the lands is always a benefit.
That was Gina McGuire-Palma with the Great Basin Coordination Center.